If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and I don't know, when's the last time you heard that song, Israel? Israel Adonijay is in the studio, former Chicago Bear, current serial businessman, I guess. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about a line from you. It says in your bio, it says, he's been building toward the next phase of his life since he was a child, which is a very smart thing. I don't know how many people do that. What does that mean?
Well, I've always thought about my future from a very young age, even as early as 13. I had goals set for my life,
right,
and things that I wanted to achieve, and I knew where I wanted to go. How I didn't know exactly how I was going to get there, but I knew I want to get to that place.
You were probably open to other things, right? Because at 13, football wasn't one of your goals.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, football really was never one of my goals until my high school coach said, Izzy, we want you to play. I was a basketball player, and I said, I don't love football. He called my mother, said I registered Izzy to play for the provincial team, the state team. And
In Canada.
And she said, well, your coach thought enough to open this door for you. Whether you like it or not, we're going to this practice. I was upset. We drove 2.5 hours to that first practice, and I made the team.
And that translates, doesn't it, to business, being open to possibility?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we were talking off the air, and one of the things when you're a player is there are a lot of players who finish their career and they don't know what to do next, right? And this is part of that planning. You had some great advice during your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Early on in my career, and we started doing our charity. We had an all-star camp. We fed about 250 kids every year. The sponsor of that camp had received a call from a former player that was in financial stress. And after telling him that she could not provide any resource, signing autographs for money, she looked at me and said, Izzy, I love you, but when you retire, there's going to be a new number 71. And that number 71 is who we're going to give our resources to. Right. So before you retire, before you hang up your cleats, figure out life after football and figure out the resources.
Do you think people expect less from you because you're an NFL player?
You know, I honestly do think that in some aspects, yes.
Can I tell you, so Ron Rivera, when I was back doing Bear stuff, when Ron retired, he worked here as a sportscaster for a time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I'll never forget this. It was one of the dumbest things I ever said. I was talking to Rivera, and it was about a player, like you said, in financial distress. And I said something like, well, these guys, they don't know what they're doing. And he looked at me, and he's like, well, I did. You know, like, how dare you make such a generalization?
General statement, yeah.
Did you run into that?
You know, I mean, I think there are actually a lot of guys out there that are working towards building life after football while they're in the game. But there's a lot more guys out there. The stories that we hear are, for the most part, of the guys that are going through those challenges.
Tell everyone how you spent your off days, your Tuesdays,
so
your playing days.
2009, I acquired a small operation. My first really successful business. And every Tuesday on our off days, I was in a factory. I was tasting different Concord.
It was disposable communion cups.
Pre-filled communion cups. That's our core business today.
Right.
And we're an industry leader in that space. So, but before we got to where we are today, it was about, I was in the factory. I was taping the lines down to make sure we were in regulation. I was building a freezer. And I was, you know, working on our juice formula that we pasteurize in house, and that was every Tuesday.
While you're an active player, your days off, when most people are nursing their wounds or going to a party somewhere, you're in a factory, near West Side?
Yeah, no, we're right off Elston in Sacramento, right downtown here.
Doing masking tape on the floor?
Yeah, exactly.
What were you thinking?
I was just like, hey, this early on, I was like, I'm going to build this business. It's going to be great. We struggled for almost 24 months. I said, you know what? I need to stick to tackling people. And then I was fortunate to reach out to some mentors, which that's so important to say, you know what? You've never done manufacturing, Izzy. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to have in place. They came in. They looked at my factory. I went and looked at theirs. And that was the big difference.
It strikes me that probably was before this whole mentoring. I mean, it's a very different atmosphere now than it would have been then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell me also then the other business Ask the Doctor.
Yeah.
Well, I love how this came about. It was kind of an accident.
Yeah, it was an accident. My dear friend, we went to school actually together, and he acquired this domain, Ask the Doctor, and he put up a simple page.
He thought it'd be a cool name.
Yeah, Ask the Doctor, and you know, open a simple query where you could just ask a question. Thought nothing of it. Months went by, and randomly went back and looked at it, and there were thousands of questions asked by people across the world. And our partner today, our medical partner today, joined their team, and we started answering people's question. And so today we're the lead platform in question and answer. We've had over 5 million questions asked. Every country in the world, we've had people ask questions. We have a army of doctors that are part of our team. And we're looking to help, really. The problem is there's a major shortage of doctors in America.
Sure, sure.
There'll be a million people every day who do not have access to a doctor. We want to be that solution.
And so there we start with planning in the beginning of the interview, and in the end, just being, I mean, just sort of as a whim and being ready to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and
you're smiling.
Sometimes.
Look at you. So tell me also about the foundation. I know you've got an event coming up.
Yeah, so December 15th, we'll have our 10th annual Shop with a Cop. We'll have 100 kids that are just amazing young men and women. We'll partner with almost 50 to 75 police officers from Chicago here. We'll start with bowling, pizza, and then each kid will get to go shopping for the holidays.
Can people help out, or how do they get more information on that?
Yeah, you can get more information at teamiif.org. And we're just fortunate to have a lot of great corporate and city community partners. It's especially this time of year, it's about coming together, it's about love, supporting one another.
Israel Adonijay, it's great to meet you. I'm so glad you came in.
It's a pleasure.
Let's
Thank
do it again.
You.
Will we do it again?
Absolutely.
It's the Business Lunch on 720. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1223. Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our regular conversations with Bill Geiger are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome, Bill.
Good afternoon, sir.
So what a lot has happened since the last time we sat down together.
Just a tad, huh?
Been an election. The Cubs have won the World Series. Now, we were here post-World Series.
Yes, we were.
But the election happened. You know, and I've been interested in the reaction to it, because if you saw the Dow futures on Tuesday night, I mean, they just went
down.
They were
down 850, and then it turned around the next day.
Well, that's the thing. People were saying it was going to be this 4 or 5% sort of reaction. Never materialized. I don't know if you can know.
You know, and the bottom line is you can't. Everybody has an opinion. But what it's doing to people who are approaching retirement, maybe you're 5 or 10 years out, is people are really, really, really nervous.
Right.
And they're worried. They're worried about losing half their portfolio in another big downturn. They're worried about where they're going to get the income to live for the rest of their life once they retire, because bond interest rates are so low.
Right.
We had a 60-year-old couple come into our office on Monday. Really nice folks, decent-sized portfolio. And I always open up a meeting asking them what's on their mind. What are your concerns? And the man said to me, he says, Bill, he says, I'm worried about another 2008. I'm worried about losing half of my portfolio. He said, if that happens, we're not going to retire the way we want
to.
Sure,
sure.
And the wife said, what I'm worried about is when we retire, our lifestyle costs a whole lot more than Social Security. Where are we going to get the income to pay our bills for the next 20 to 30 years? And that's a pattern that we've been seeing a lot of for a long time.
So we're talking about risk and income, really.
Risk and income, that's right.
What should we be afraid of? Right?
Just those two things.
Well, but we're afraid of a lot of things that maybe we sort of have undue anxiety. What should we really be watching be worried about?
Well, you should be worried about those things, and here's why. We don't know what's going to happen to the market. Anybody who says that they do is making an educated guess. And when you're dealing with something as serious as the rest of your life in retirement.
Right. You're laughing, but it's not funny, because, I mean, it is the reason we've been involved in this saving and investing for so long.
Exactly. And it may have taken you 30, 35, 40 years to save up what you have. And after all that time, to lose half of it on the eve of retirement,
right,
it could change your entire life. So nobody knows which direction the market's going to go. But what we do know is sooner or later there's a big downturn. And the objective of doing good planning, Steve, is to make sure that your portfolio is as bulletproof as humanly possible. It's not perfect, but as close as you can get to that.
So should people, if you're like 40, 45, be worried about riding this wave, or when do you start to get a little concerned?
When you're 5 to 10 years out from retirement, late 50s, early 60s, that's the time you really need to get serious. Because before that, maybe you can ride it out. You know, if you're in your 40s, you have a big loss, you've got 20 years to make it up again. But if you're in your late 50s.
It's not fun, but you've got the time.
But you got the time. If you're late 50s, early 60s, and you have a big loss in your portfolio, your life is going to change. And I'm saying that just as seriously as possible because you don't have time to make it up. So you either work a lot longer.
Right.
Or you live a much smaller life for the next 20 to 30 years.
And that's why here what you talk about is setting up these sort of vehicles that you have an income coming in once you retire.
Well, the two big objectives in that 5 to 10-year time range is to get your risk down. First, understand what the risk is and to get it down. The second major goal is to start working on preparing to get the income out of your portfolio that you're going to need. I don't mean spending principal. I mean creating income that you can depend upon. You know, this is a great segue into, I know what you're going to talk about in just a moment here. For the next five callers who call in today, we're going to do a complimentary full-blown retirement plan for them. We'll analyze their portfolio. We'll look at where they can get their income from. We'll look at how much risk they have. And for the first five people who have at least $500,000 in their portfolio, I'm going to sit down with them personally to help them put together this plan. And it's complimentary, no charge, and it's just something special for our listeners.
Excellent. Well, Bill Geiger, thanks very much for coming by. We'll see you in a couple
more
weeks.
Nice to be here, sir.
Who knows where we'll be in a couple more weeks.
Who knows?
We could be much more relaxed and much less relaxed. We'll see.
Amen.
Bill Geiger, your retirement can last 20 to 30 years, and that's a lot longer than a 4 or 8 year presidency, as we were talking about. It's time to start thinking about who's going to help you throughout retirement and many presidents to come. So turn to Geiger Wealth Management. If you're nearing retirement, Bill and Geiger Wealth Management have a special opportunity for you. Bill's going to sit down with you personally, do a full-blown retirement analysis, complimentary for the next five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Call 800-681-2498. Bill will translate the complex retirement process, help you reduce risk, and prepare a sustainable income in retirement no matter who's in office. Call Geiger Wealth Management right now at 800-681-2498. That number is 800-681-2498. It's 12:38. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, Donald Trump is in the midst of his transition with opponents already predicting a disastrous presidency. He hasn't even named a Secretary of State, Attorney General. He campaigned the idea that Barack Obama was the worst president ever. And what about George W. Bush? His opponents, there are a lot of people who say he might well be nominated as well. They're all overlooking James Buchanan, who apparently is universally recognized as the worst president ever and is the subject of a book by that title by Robert Strauss. Robert's in the studio. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for being here.
All right, maybe a strange fit for a business show. I don't know, but I'm interested in, you know, we talk so much about presidential legacies and who's the best and who's the worst. We rank them. Why do you think we do that?
I think we rank everything. I mean, we sit there and watch the basketball polls every Monday, even though there's going to be a championship at the end of the season. We by picking stocks, we're ranking what we think is the best and worst.
Yeah.
So presidents, there's only 43 of them. I know that not everybody is familiar with everything James Buchanan did, but if they went to school, you know, they've heard of him. So, you know, I think it's natural.
When Barack Obama campaigned for Hillary Clinton and saying, you know, if you want to continue my agenda or my legacy, we also get wrapped up in this idea of legacy. And it just struck me. And so people are like, oh, the Obama legacy is going to be undone. First of all, us mere mortals, we're not really in charge of anyone's legacy, right? Situations change, and they're not static at when someone leaves the White House.
No, not at all. And in fact, you know, when I tell people if I were to have advised Mr. Trump or Mrs. Clinton to read about somebody, I would have said, well, you know, generally agreed, Washington, Lincoln, the best presidents. But you're not going to have the Civil War. I know some people think we are, but we're not. And you're not going to start a new country. So then what do you look for? Well, do you look for James Monroe, sort of a good president? No, that's like, you know, writing a biography of the fifth best Cub, you know? but you can look at Buchanan and his other competitors for the worst and say, I don't want to be like that.
And so avoid what Buchanan didn't avoid.
Right.
And there's a little bit of both those candidates in Buchanan, right? I should say, You know, we scheduled this interview long before the voting was done. But there's a little Hillary Clinton and James Buchanan. Or I should say there's Buchanan and Hillary, and there's Buchanan and Trump.
Yeah, here's the thing. I mean, Buchanan was the most, if you look at a resume, the most qualified man ever to run. He was in both houses of the state legislature in Pennsylvania. He was in both houses of Congress. He was ambassador to Russia, ambassador to Great Britain, secretary of state. I mean, that's like 40 years of stuff. And then the part that he has about that you could say about Trump is that he never really led anything. I realize Trump led a business, but I'm saying all of his experience was being as a diplomat. So that's what he was. He was the best party giver of the 19th century.
And what made him so bad?
He couldn't make a decision at every moment in his presidency. And it was fraught with stuff. I mean, it led to the Civil War. And he would say, it would be like being the manager for the Cubs and a guy's on first. Do I decide to let him steal? And you're going back and forth and back and forth. And finally, he gets picked off. Well, it's the same thing that happened with Buchanan. At every moment he had to make a decision, he put it off. And it ended up in disaster.
Abraham Lincoln is elected in November. Buchanan is in office. Lincoln wouldn't be sworn in until March, right? That's when they did it then. And in that interim, states started seceding.
Seven states secede. And Buchanan interprets the Constitution. I don't know if it's an interpretation or just fraught with stuff in his mind. But he says that the Constitution doesn't allow the states to secede, but I can't do anything about it. Well, you know, former President John Tyler, who's on obscurity somewhere, comes in and says, we got to have a commission. And he has a commission and they decide to do stuff. And Buchanan says, I can't do it.
He was so unpopular that when Lincoln was elected, he gave him security.
Right.
First time ever?
I don't know if it was the first time ever, but it was certainly the most prominent one. Everybody knew he had security. Right. He goes back to his house in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He has a nice little ceremony when he gets there. But soon after, it's become Mr. Buchanan's war. The war starts a month later, and people go by and throw rotten vegetables at his house and put graffiti on his gates.
Really?
So then
he's sort of socially inept as well, right? The Civil War is going on, the war that he neglected to stop.
Right.
And he writes to the sitting president, Abraham Lincoln, not about war, but about a book he left behind.
Right, right. You know, so the war started and the Battle of Manassas has happened. It's not looking good for the Union. And Lincoln gets a letter. Now, it's the only one in the Library of Congress, so let's presume it's the only one he ever wrote. And it's all about, I left this four-volume set of, in French, of Napoleon's wars. Could you please get your secretary to send it back to me? Like, it's the first thing Lincoln has to think to do.
Well, he didn't have cable TV at the time, so maybe he didn't know what was going on.
Perhaps. I guess he didn't know that there was a war sitting around there.
Even John Kennedy in office said, look, no one can grade a president. Right. Not even James. You can't even grade James Buchanan. Right. So Kennedy, in 1962 or so, recognized him as the worst.
It's been clear. I mean, there have been many ratings by historians. I won't say many, seven or eight. One done by the Tribune a number of years ago. And the top three are always the same, Washington, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. Mostly Washington and Lincoln at number one. But almost ingloriously, almost every time, Buchanan is the worst.
All right, we talked about the incoming president and what to not do when it comes to Buchanan. Let's wrap up by, again, talking about this legacy and the idea that the current president's, Obama's, legacy doesn't end on January 20th, right? Ronald Reagan's legacy turned out to be much different than the day he left office.
I would say that even liberals who didn't like Reagan at least say he was decisive. At least don't make him out to be, a non-decisive person. And I think that you'll find that 40 years from now, 50 years from now, your grandchildren or great-grandchildren are going to come to your grandchildren and say, oh my God, do you know that in 2016, a lot of people didn't think the president was born in the United States? It's going to be, some of these things are just going to be forgotten.
Right. And there may be something he did that we're not even that aware of right now that's going to have a huge impact.
Right. And it could be certain things that Trump, allows to go free. Let's say he says, maybe we won't overturn the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. Well, then that will be a legacy of Obama's.
Robert Strauss is the author. Worst President Ever, written as three independent sentences. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a beautiful Thursday afternoon here in the Allstate Showcase studio. It's just, it feels warm out there. Okay, so having been around for as long as I have, you have the joy sometimes of to look at people who used to be an intern with you or that you worked with when they were very young in their career and who really would be nothing without you.
That's right. Absolutely right.
Kartike, come up to the microphone. Sure. Kartike Mehrotra is in the studio. And Kartike was an intern here at WGN Radio, what, early 21st century?
Yeah, 2003, 2004, I was thinking about. So it's been 13 years.
Yeah, and so you grew up in this area.
I grew up in upstate New York. I went to college here. I spent about a decade in Illinois, and then went to India.
Yeah, and so I want to talk to you because you're writing now for Bloomberg.
Right.
But I'm just interested, and really, it's great to see you. I've followed you from time to time. I sort of Google stalked you because I have a few favorite interns.
Like you're the one.
I am the one.
Yeah.
But you got out of school, and you and so many people can't make a career in journalism. You're making a successful career.
Yeah, you know what? I've got a number of colleagues who are still doing okay here. It's not as bad as we thought it would be, but the rest of the world is growing, right? And there's a demand for information and news in other parts of the world. And so I was able to benefit from that.
You graduate from NIU.
That's right.
And then make your way to India. How do you get to India?
I was about to move from Rockford, Illinois to Schenectady, New York.
Two very similar towns.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, I can perhaps look at opportunities outside of this region. I got on a plane and I interviewed with as many people as I possibly could. I think I had like 30 interviews in 3 weeks.
Did you know anyone in Delhi? Did you have family?
I've got family in Delhi. I've got family in Mumbai and Bangalore. And I bounced around those three cities just getting a feel of the media circus that does exist there as well as here. And fell in love with a newspaper that was just doing great journalism.
Nice.
And I thought, you know, I can do this for a year. It ended up being seven.
In India.
Yeah.
You're back here now.
That's right.
And living in California,
right?
Writing for Bloomberg.
That's right.
Now, when I do the Google searching or the Google stalking, it seems like you've been writing a lot about the Volkswagen settlement.
That's right. That's right. So for the last year or so, Volkswagen has been under fire for cheating in its diesel vehicles, something like 500,000. And they have come to a $14.7 billion settlement, right, in the last few weeks to finally resolve a dispute with most of their drivers.
And so you think, well, maybe that's over then. That is behind us. And then you do a story this week about there's a lawsuit over Dodge trucks.
Right.
And so, if I read this correctly, the suit is alleging that the fraud there was happening before the Volkswagen fraud.
That's right. So the cars that are under dispute now are a series of Dodge Ram trucks built between 2007 and 2012. And the allegation, which FCA, Fiat Chrysler, which is now the company that runs Dodge trucks, and Cummins Inc., which is the tech manufacturer, the diesel engine maker, have said is that these cars have been cheating emissions, that their exhaust has been escaping these engines for years.
Is this a different situation? Because it seems like when Volkswagen was called out, they said, yeah, you got us.
Yep.
And Chrysler and Cummins are saying, wait a minute, this isn't right.
Yeah, these two companies are not owning up to it. They're fighting back. And they're claiming that, you know what, if this did happen, it certainly wasn't intentional. But they're going to fight this case in court, unlike Volkswagen.
So we've got Dodge, we've got Volkswagen. Volkswagen admitted, Dodge under dispute. Are there others?
There's a couple of cases against Mercedes in the U.S., but that is it. So it's everything under Volkswagen. You've got Porsches, you've got Audis, you've got VWs,
right,
you've got a handful of Mercedes, and now you have these Dodge trucks. So this certainly does beg the question, who else? And I guess we'll find out with more litigation in the future.
That is Kartike Mehrotra. You can read more at Bloomberg.com. Great to see you.
You too, Steve.
I can't wait for the next time. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.